Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy John, engineering and producing our program on the other side of the glass. We're off and running on Tuesday. It's the 17th of December. No, why rush it? It's already been a year that seems to have flown by. September 2024 will begin. Maybe I was thinking about our beginning our 15th year in January. Coming to you from the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studios, we're on the campus of Bustos Media, where we have five radio stations now under one roof. This one's 1030. KVOI, The Voice. We've got our worldwide live listening at buckmastershow.com, our live line for our telephone interviews, which we will be utilizing in just a few seconds, by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go up to Phoenix now on the live line. Dr. Dave Wells. Dr. Wells, the research director for the nonpartisan, not-for-profit, very middle-of-the-road think tank, if you will, the Grand Canyon Institute. And Dr. Wells and the team out with new information today about the Empowerment Scholarship account, known as vouchers. That account now has grown to $360 million in unspent money. Meanwhile, the state of Arizona has been pulling funds from the opioid settlement to help pay for our prison system. Dr. Wells, how are you, sir?
Oh, I'm doing well. Yeah, and we just literally just released that publicly just a few minutes before your show started.
Good timing. What can you say about this overall? This money just keeps accumulating. Why is it not being spent?
It's apparent that some parents are not spending the total amounts, and this goes beyond the universal vouchers. It includes kids with special needs, where one of the things we've been tracking is the number of ESA vouchers that exceed $25,000. And before universal vouchers were in place, it was about 3,000 kids had such vouchers, and now it's about 7,000 kids have that. And there's a relative. We don't have the data on the distribution yet, but what happened was the fourth quarter ESA reports was published earlier in the month, and from that we were able to calculate actually how much money was spent: $535 million last year. But $718 million was awarded. So the difference is $185 million. And we already knew that the accounts at the end of the prior fiscal year had $175 million. So not to do too much math, but that meant that the implied total now is $360 million. And again, most of that is in relatively few accounts that have a lot of money accumulating in them.
Where should that money, in your opinion, be going, Dr. Wells?
So we think that the purpose of an ESA account, if we're going to have it, is to educate a child and provide appropriate services for the child. And if that's not being used for that, then it ought to revert back to the general fund. So we shouldn't have to be pulling money from an opioid settlement, because we do have, you know, critical issues with fentanyl in the state. And there was a really good plan related to trying to get at the community levels and try to, you know, help address those fundamental issues. And instead, it's been diverted to help pay for our prison system. And so we think, you know, that simply this money, you know, is $360 million approximately that can be put in the general fund. The legislature can still, you know, at the beginning of next session, pass legislation that enables this money to be swept and then recommitted and then put the money back into the opioid settlement fund and other places.
Well, we are scheduled to have Tom Horn, Superintendent of Public Instruction, on our Friday Focus interview this Friday. So I will ask him why the money isn't going back to the general fund, but he couldn't do it alone. It would require the legislature, correct, Dr. Wells?
Yeah, the legislature, because what happens is they're paid quarterly, but every quarter a parent would receive the ESAA amount, and essentially it's on a debit card. It doesn't accumulate interest, and then it's simply it becomes the property of that parent. So the legislature would have to pass legislation to enable it to be swept. And keep in mind, these dollars can be used after a student graduates from high school, and can be used for any college or university in Arizona, and any accredited private post-secondary university, which would mean any expensive private college or university in the country as well. And so that's something that people don't have ESA accounts don't get to have. And I think that that's not really a very fair way to run things.
I know you and the team have been looking over a very robust, to put it mildly, what are the 13 propositions on the ballot. One of them that jumped out at you and the team was Prop 312. That would be Prop 312. Tell us a little bit about that and why you think we need to focus on that.
Yeah, so I think it's Prop 132.
But 132.
That's okay. There's so many of them, it's hard to keep track anymore.
132.
So this was something that the Goldwater Institute pushed based off of what was happening in, quote unquote, the zone in Phoenix. Because there were some, small property owners who were having a lot of, negative impacts from the homeless population that had accumulated in that area. And so what this Prop 132 says, if a city doesn't enforce all kinds of regulations, especially against homeless people, and a property owner has to expend money, then they can deduct it from their property taxes. The problem that that I see with this is that it's we have a problem with criminalizing people who don't have a place to stay. We can't, and it used to be the case that cities had to provide at least enough beds at some place, so that therefore they couldn't simply sweep people away. But there was a grant passed. Supreme Court decision at the end of June that removed that requirement. So now cities are free to criminalize people who are homeless without providing any alternative for them. And I think, that's where I think this goes awry. And I think because the fundamental problem is we want to help address that. And just to be forthright with it, I've been volunteering the last 7 Sundays to help provide food and services to folks who are homeless in one of the parks in Tempe and getting to know them. And I think, it's when we dehumanize people, just like with the Haitian pet eaters, supposedly in Springfield, Ohio, we're taking people who are humans and making them somehow less than. And we often do that to people who are homeless or food insecure. And I think we need to figure out a way to, find other ways to address that problem. And it's not an easy problem. We've been struggling with this since at least the 80s, but it's something we need to really address. And I don't think 132 is designed to do that. I think it's designed mostly to encourage the criminalization of being homeless.
The Grants Pass Oregon decision really was a huge sea change as far as how cities could handle their homeless population. And taking it into the realm of being homeless can be considered a criminal offense now in this country, Dr. Wells.
Yeah, and it's really, so like when I was out on Sunday, I was getting to know and talk to some of the folks, and there are folks who are like saying like they don't know, like you're not allowed to quote unquote camp in a park. You're not supposed to, parks close at 10. And there were people who were like trying to figure out, where actually am I going to be able to put my body tonight? And I visited respite centers for the heat respite centers. And there's a lot of folks who are just completely passed out sleeping there because they're so on edge overnight that they can't sleep. And it's, so these are, people who have, fundamental needs. Some of them have substance abuse challenges. And a lot of them have gone through traumas, both at being homeless as well as before that. And we need to sort of get at those root problems of it. And then other folks can't, there are folks who have jobs and they can't afford a house, housing yet. These are all things I think we need to really have serious and challenging discussions about. But we need to, come up with that because ideas to criminalize put people in jail for being in parks or not providing toilets for them, and you end up having, public urination or things like that. We have to figure out how to meet people's needs better. And essentially what we think about is trying to meet people where they're at and try to provide a bridge to help them get to a better place.
So folks who vote yes on 132, what would that in effect mean, bottom line, Dave Wells?
So that would basically endorse criminalizing or, opening the door, like with Grants Pass, to criminalizing people who are homeless. So I personally, the Grant Kenyon Institute didn't take a position on this, but I personally am advocating for people to vote no on Prop 132 and then really make a push to try to figure out better ways that we can approach this issue. Well, I mean, localities could still, you know, pass something locally to address, you know, small businesses that might be negatively impacted. But I think applying a statewide blanket mandate across the board is really going to be detrimental to folks who are unsheltered and basically undermine the foundations of our community.
All right. Dr. Dave Wells, research director at the nonpartisan, not-for-profit Grand Canyon Institute. And to find out what they're doing there, their website is pretty simple. Just spell it out, GrandCanyonInstitute.org. Thank you very much, Dave.
Thank you very much. Good to be with you.
All right. We'll take a break right here. Shelley Fishman's with me in studio, and he's got kind of a wavering thumb, which is pushing a little bit to the downside on this National Constitution Day. Be right back. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
On average, the Regional Transportation Authority annually contributes over $100 million to regional transportation improvements to supplement limited federal and state funds. This critical funding source provides funding for nearly two-thirds of our region's needed transportation improvements through its 2006 voter-approved half-cent sales tax. To receive updates on a new 20-year plan in development, visit rtanext.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Quality of Life Medical Center has served Tucson residents for more than 20 years. We understand the key to a long, healthy life is not just about getting the right medical treatment, but it's also about feeling good mentally and emotionally. Whether you're looking for preventative care or treatment for a specific condition, we're here for you. And we are accepting new patients for primary care, pain management, and sexual health. Please visit QLMC.com to request an appointment. Quality of Life. Our name says it all.
Shelley Fishman is a financial advisor and business consultant in Tucson, Arizona. Contact Shelley via buckmastershow.com or directly via email at saf824@earthlink.net.
Oh, the suspense. We're all waiting, Shelley, for the big day tomorrow, aren't we?
We are. We are. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Shelley. thanks for your weekly service that you perform to this program. You do a great job. But a lot of people are waiting to see, is it going to be a half? Is it going to be a quarter cut? Who knows?
Well, we'll know tomorrow.
What, 24 hours or so?
But what I can say is that the market has built in the certainty of a rate cut. And we had something that hasn't happened in 2 years. Last week, we had every one of the days of the week was positive for the major indices. That hasn't happened in 2 years. And then it extended for two of the three major indices yesterday. Now, today, we're, you know, it's Tuesday, so
yeah.
Tuesdays are Tuesdays.
But, taking a hit.
What we have is the markets essentially saying the economy is in good shape. We had spending numbers, consumer spending numbers today that were higher than expected. We also had a restatement of the GDP growth for the second quarter, which came in at 3%. The first quarter was 1.6. There's an almost certainty that the year will come in, you know, it's somewhere around between 2.5% and 3% GDP growth. You know, that is very, very robust. I don't know any other way to say it. You know, it's just much higher than we've had in the past decade or so. And all of the indicators are pointing to inflation's way down. Salaries are up higher than inflation for at least 2 years now. And people are spending money.
Mm-hmm.
And they're spending money in ways that, you know, an economy approaching recession, people would not be spending money this way. We're not approaching recession. We have, in fact, engineered somehow a soft landing. And, you know, I always have to say caveat it is if your own particular circumstances are not reflecting that, that's your reality. But the macro indicators are that, you know, the economy is the envy of the world and continuing to be. Back to the Fed. The Fed chair will make an announcement tomorrow afternoon.
After the close?
After the close. Okay. Or just around the same time. I think she sometimes starts a half an hour before the close.
Hmm.
But it's going to be either a quarter of a point or a half a point.
Will the markets react if it's a half point?
If it's a half point, there will be some surprise, and you can see that there'll be some spiking in the market afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not that spiking is maintained is another issue, of course. But what's most interesting is not what he's going to be doing, what the Fed is going to be doing tomorrow, but what he says. What is he going to say about the rest of the year? What most analysts are thinking is that we could see between a point and a half.
Before the end of the year?
Before the end of the year, total. Now, you know, that'd bring rates down, not to their lowest, certainly not where they were a couple of years ago, but that would very much act to stimulate those parts of the economy now that are still lagging behind. And those are the parts of the economy that are dependent upon people borrowing money.
Mm-hmm.
So houses, cars, and that kind of thing.
So the suspense really isn't over the quarter or a half. It's more about what about the rest of the year.
I think that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a very sensitive time for him to say anything. He doesn't want to appear to be political. On the other hand, he is probably not going to temper his remarks based upon the fact that we're in the middle of an election cycle. We know, because you and I have talked about it right here on the show, that election cycles are, you know, fairly uniformly unmoved mm-hmm. by the last couple of months of the election,
mm-hmm.
and that we only see upward movement after mm-hmm. the election is settled.
Mm-hmm. I want to turn to, you know, this rumor that continues about dogs and cats and geese. I know, in places in Ohio and all of that. But what isn't being said is that the immigrant community, specifically the Haitian community in Springfield, Ohio, didn't arrive yesterday. They didn't arrive overnight. Some of these people have been there for years and have built legitimate livings for themselves.
And while I'm sure there are
restaurants,
some undocumented
businesses,
Haitians, they are here legally. Now, you can disagree with the policy that allows them to come in from Haiti, but they are here legally. Mm-hmm. They have populated, you know, some cities that were essentially decimated by closing of factories and reinvigorated those cities. Now, you know, if you're, I'm going to say it, a bigoted white person, you know, who doesn't like to see a lot of black people around, who speaks some sort of French dialect, then you know, you're going to resent that. And there are real problems for these cities. There are problems when, you know, this past couple of years where immigration has been largely illegal and largely massive, that has really hurt the big cities in the north because they have had to house and educate and provide health care for people. That's been a problem. We're working our way through it. But for a smaller town or city like Springfield, Ohio, that creates a short-term crisis. Long-term, however, it creates a boon. And these cities have come back. Construction is back. Healthcare facilities that were closing or closed have reopened because there are now, you know, customers and ways of providing that care. Mm-hmm. And we see schools repopulated. These immigrants are doing a very, very good job of paying taxes, paying into Social Security and Medicare. And interestingly, the statistics came out, I think it was yesterday morning, every immigrant in one of these towns creates 1.2 jobs that Native Americans want because they're service jobs, because these immigrants take the money that they're earning and spend it locally.
Yeah.
And that creates demand for people in jobs.
Wasn't that at one point part of the American dream, immigrants coming to this country?
It still is, as far as I'm concerned.
Making the country better?
Well, and they do make the country better. And, yeah, you know, the country has to spend some time and resources.
I mean, you are not encouraging or condoning illegally entering this country.
I am not. We have to be in control of our borders.
But you are encouraging immigration.
Absolutely. This is a country that continues to be this glowing beacon on a hill and is the place where a lot of people who don't feel welcome or at home or safe where they were born would like to come. And we should find ways of making that happen for them. Our immigration system is broken. We had a pretty good start at helping to fix it in Congress. And for various political reasons, that has failed. You know, the President Biden has done what he can to try to close down the border in a more orderly fashion. But we need these people, especially since our birth rates are down. Mm-hmm. If you want the economy to continue to grow, we need to bring these people in. We need to find a way, for instance, we have lots of people with green cards and student visas who come in and get well-educated. Then we send them home.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and many of them would like to stay.
Mm-hmm.
We have this lottery system. I mean, this whole thing is so convoluted and broken, and it just doesn't recognize who we are in terms of the aspirations of this country. Now, who we really are, you know, the prejudice against the Irish immigrants, the Italian immigrants, the Jewish immigrants, I mean, all of that is real.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't always meet our aspirations. But there they are. And now we seem to be falling back into that very bigoted kind of thing, as if you're not a white Christian, a straight white Christian. You're probably not welcome here, or at least that's the message we're getting. And, you know, this is away from my, you know, expertise lane. But from an economic perspective, we need these immigrants.
Mm-hmm.
We need a steady stream of people who are willing to take jobs that native-born Americans are not willing to take. And on the way, create families, and those families get educated. And by the next generation, those people are contributing to this society in as great and wonderful a way as native-born Americans are. Mm-hmm. And we have to recognize that and get over this nonsense that they don't look like us, and therefore we don't want them.
Who's going to take these jobs if these people are not going to?
Well, nobody. And so construction goes down. Yes. You know, service industries goes down. You know, you get companies spending a great deal of money to mechanize jobs. You know, you use bots, robots. Mm-hmm. You know, to do jobs that people were doing, and these jobs can be more effectively done very often by people. I mean, we need if you believe in classical economics. Growth is very, very important. And growth depends to a very large extent on population growth. And right now, where we don't have it naturally, we still have a very robust economy. And part of the reason we have that robust economy is because of immigrants. Mm-hmm. We also have a social safety net system that is based upon those currently working are paying for those people who are retired, and that keeps rolling over year over year over year. So if you don't have a large enough workforce, then the entire social safety net system is in jeopardy. So as an economist, I look at that and I say, we've got to fix this problem.
All right, Shelley Fishman. Thank you, Shelley, and we'll see you in a week or so, okay?
Yes, sir.
All right, we'll take a break right here. The general is in the house, retired three-star general, General Jeff Buchanan, will be my guest right after the mid-show break.
Dine-in or take-out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita's Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita's Sun, covering your hometown.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show and the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Green Things 3384 East River Road by the Rito River. I'm sure the Green Things were happy to get a little rain. We got a little at 3 o'clock in the morning. I know that because a big thunder boomer kind of jarred me out of a pleasant dream, let's put it that way. The 13-acre site at Green Things has everything you need for the garden, and they've got wonderful garden supplies and accessories as part of their business, and that part of the business is called Zocalo Village. So they're greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. They're in their 53rd year of business. I know the owners very well, Jan and Jack, very hands-on, and they're open daily, Green Things. When we do our telephone interviews, 790-2040, our live line presented by our friends at Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. We always welcome back to our program. Try to get the general on the show every, I'd say, 4 to 6 weeks. Lieutenant General, that's three stars, Jeff Buchanan, who retired after he nearly did four decades with the Army. He retired in 2019. He commanded at one point 6,000 troops on the southwest border. He led that big military operation out of San Juan, Puerto Rico, after Hurricane Maria devastated that American holding Commonwealth. It's a Commonwealth.
It is.
Yeah,
yep,
thanks,
sure is.
Thanks, General. And he did four tours in Iraq, one in Afghanistan, graduate UA, University of Arizona, the ROTC program. He's a homegrown guy when it comes to the Army. He has and does advise on occasion Homeland Security. He's a commissioner, one of five commissioners on the Arizona Game and Fish Board or Commission. He's an advisor to Vet Force Foundation, volunteer deputy sheriff in Arizona's smallest county, but I think probably when it comes to scenery, one of the most beautiful and diverse, Santa Cruz County, and that's where General Buchanan resides with his lovely wife. They've got a little ranch outside of Patagonia, and it's always great to have you on the program, General.
Thanks, Bill. It's always a pleasure to be here.
Well, we, of course, talked about 9/11 last week, but it's something that needs to be brought up, and I wanted to delve into this a little bit with you. The latest polling, which was done on 9/11 by Rasmussen, their reporting service, which is very reputable, the question was, 9/11, have Americans forgotten? Well, surveys are indicating the trend is definitely to the question, yes. 48% of likely U.S. voters now believe many Americans have forgotten the impact of the 9/11 terrorist attacks. That continues to go. That number has been going up for the last 4 or 5 years, and it's a couple of percentage points every year. What's going on there, General Buchanan?
Well, I think at least some of it is just
time.
It's time. It's 23 years back, and what so many people had personal experiences and how impactful it was at the time, and then the personal experiences that followed, or family members deployed off around the world, these kinds of things, a lot of that has just changed. If you think about it, you know, it's 23 years ago. Let me put it in context to you this way. There are people who enlisted in the Army after our invasion of Iraq in 2003, which was, you know, a year and a half after the 9/11 attacks, who are retired from the military now.
Wow.
Because of their 20 years of service.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it is a long time. I think that's part of it, number one. Number two, my own observation, and I lived in Europe right after 9/11, and so it affected me even differently there. But my own observation
is...
What was your rank? I was a lieutenant colonel.
Lieutenant colonel at the time of 9/11.
Right.
Okay, go ahead.
My own observation is that was one of the last times that our country truly came together.
I would agree
with that. In the wake of, in this case, a tragedy, and that's unfortunately what oftentimes forces the country to come together. But since then, we have grown apart and retreated into politically shaped corners. And so people have a hard time remembering that spirit and that feeling of togetherness, and that we're in it together and we can solve all things if we work together, because they've been driven so far apart, you know, through ideology. And, you know, I would not underestimate the role of, you know, social media or the media at large to help people get there. Even some of it driven, as we know now, by Chinese and North Korean and Russian hackers,
mm-hmm.
you know, so, mm-hmm. But a lot of different factors have come together to drive us apart, and so we have a hard time remembering that spirit of togetherness.
So many young Americans wound up the day after 9/11 just to have, it's the same kind of spirit that we saw on December the 8th, Monday, 1941. Recruiting stations, you know, the line was around the block. Well, I don't know if the line was around the block, but I do know that recruiting stations the day after 9/11 were very busy.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, if you think of the poster child for that effort, to me, is Pat Tillman.
Yes.
You know, here's a guy... who
former
tremendously
ASU
successful
football player, and then went on
then
to the pros.
Then went on to the pros, was paid, you know, a gazillion dollars.
And he
I don't know how much.
And he gave it up.
He gave it up to enlist and become an Army Ranger and serve his country in Afghanistan. And to me, and it wasn't just him. It was he and his brother did
yes.
it together.
Yes.
And they were in 2nd Ranger Battalion, and obviously, you know, a tragic ending to the story and how all that happened.
Did his brother die too,
no,
or no?
No, it was during a firefight in Afghanistan. But to me, that says a lot about what true heroism is about. You know, and we often make mistakes, because if you ask your typical American who their heroes are, they're gonna come back with people who are famous. They're thinking about, you know, professional athletes, actors, musicians, movie stars, all these folks, and they've confused being famous or celebrity status with being heroic. Because if you look it up in the dictionary, the word hero comes from the ancient Greeks, and really there's only two requirements: courageous acts and a noble purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, think about Pat Tillman in that context.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he wasn't a hero because he was a famous football player.
No.
He was a hero because he courageously decided to serve his country in its time of need.
Mm-hmm.
And the purpose was really all about serving other people.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that sense, you know, you got heroes all around you. Kindergarten teachers, nurses. I mean, these are people who act courageously and provide and are driven by a noble purpose, which is
they
to serve
get up
other
every
people.
Day and they go to work and they are driven by a noble purpose. So I would agree with you. These are American heroes.
Yeah, absolutely.
So when we come back after the break, because I don't really want to begin to talk about this, but it does segue from what we were talking about, military recruiting, which has really hit now a record low. And these new numbers are pretty staggering. I'll just kind of tease it that our active duty force right now in the United States is the lowest it has been since 1940, which is, of course, before the start of America's involvement in World War II. Let's take a break, then we'll come back with General Buchanan. I'd like to hear some of his thoughts about what's going on, why fewer Americans are raising the right hand and are going into the American military. Be right back.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
2006, the county voters approved the Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year Regional Transportation Plan, half-cent sales tax. They're both effective through June 30th, 2026. The region to receive continued funding for another 20 years. RTA is developing a new plan and tax extension for voter consideration. Public input will be key. Receive updates on a new 20-year plan in development. Visit rtanext.com.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary. Home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Quality of Life Research Center has conducted more than 100 clinical trials in Arizona over its 20-year history. Because of their success, participants may have access to a variety of treatments under study that may not be available to people outside the trial. And participants may receive compensation for study-related time and travel. If you think you'd like to participate in a clinical trial, please visit QLMC.com to view our open trials and express interest.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Buckmaster in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. We send so many of our listeners over to a beautiful area of the Southwest. That would be the Southwest portion of New Mexico, the land of enchantment. It's only about a three-hour drive over to Silver City. It's particularly enchanting too, this time of year. Autumn is perfect. In New Mexico. So start your planning now by visiting southwestnewmexico.org. That's their website, and you'll have all sorts of great ideas about many, many outdoor activities, certainly in the Gila National Wilderness, and visiting the world-famous Cliff Dwellings National Monument, which is terrific. It's just north. It's a pretty drive up there from downtown Silver City up to the monument. I think it's about 40-minute drive. Very pretty. About elevation 5 to 7,500 feet. Perfect. It's pretty soon the aspens will be changing. So I love the Southwest, especially in October, which is just around the corner. All right, we continue now with our conversation with retired three-star General Jeff Buchanan, who is also a member of the five-member Arizona Game and Fish Commission. And we were talking about military recruitment. And as I was teasing before the break, General, American Active Duty Force is now the lowest since 1940. That would be before America's involvement in World War II. Department of Defense says missed quotas, 41,000 on the Navy and Army side. Only the Marines and Space Force have met their goals. And a lot of young people don't even qualify, General, to get into the military.
That's right. About three-quarters of the people who are of a proper military recruiting age are not qualified for, you know, physical, medical reasons, et cetera. Not quite. So only, I think the latest numbers I saw were 23%.
It is 23%
of those eligible are actually qualified.
So they're disqualified for numerous reasons. It'd be physical requirements. You've got to have a certain degree of education. So yeah.
It's definitely tough to get in. The size, though. Let me tackle that a little bit.
Okay.
I think the size of the military is certainly affected by recruiting struggles, but it's also budgeted, you know, for a certain size by Congress. And the end strength,
our government says we want a smaller military, right?
Absolutely. And so the end strength decided for by each of the military services is driven by a congressional decision. It's not, you know, the military and Department of Defense, each service argues this is what I need in order to accomplish the missions you set out, but then Congress makes that decision. Now, what's compounded this particular end strength problem is a smaller approved end strength and then failure to meet that through recruiting.
Yes. And the failure is that the young people, just for whatever reason, not interested, they've got other activities. What do you think?
Yeah, I think all of that. Some of it,
they don't have
some
the role models
is,
that
right.
used to have. It used to be kind of if dad served, maybe.
Yeah, you know. I mean, certainly there's been a strong connection with family members, an uncle, or you know that football coach that was a great coach that said, "Hey, the military is a great way of life." I think because there are so few, percentage-wise, so few Americans have actually served lately.
It's less than 1%.
Right. So we don't have those personal connections. And so, you know, and there's a lot of competition out there. So I think we have to figure out how do we inspire people to serve? And it doesn't have to be in the military. But we're talking about heroes. How do we inspire people to serve others, to make a difference, become a teacher, become a nurse, do something, you know, become a firefighter or a police officer, or a soldier? How do we inspire people to do that, to make a difference for others? And they don't have to do it for a career. Maybe it's a couple of years. But do this, try to make a difference for other people before you go off and make gazillions of dollars on your own. You know, I think that's an important thing that we ought to think about. If you don't mind, so for listeners out there, Bill and I were having a short discussion about one of the reasons that the military may be smaller is there are people who think that, well, we don't need a lot of people.
We've got artificial intelligence.
We can use artificial intelligence.
We'll have robots that will do all the
drones
fighting.
Drones and robots and everything. But, you know, in the end, the military exists to fight and win the nation's wars.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes people to do this. And so, and I was thinking of this quote from a great book. It's called This Kind of War. It's about the Korean War. It's written by a guy named T.R. Fehrenbach. And I looked up this quote. And so here's the quote. You may fly over a nation forever. You may bomb it, atomize it, pulverize it, and wipe it clean of life. But if you desire to defend it, if you desire to protect it, if you desire to keep it for civilization, You must do this on the ground the way the Roman legions did, in the mud.
Mm-hmm.
That's the end of the quote. It takes people to do this stuff.
It does. And well, look at World War II. We couldn't win World War II if we had just relied on the Air Force.
No, that's exactly right. But it's not one service. It's all of us coming together, fighting as a joint team that makes us so powerful. That's what makes our military powerful. It's not the Army, the Marine Corps, the Navy, the Air Force, the Coast Guard, or the Space Force. It's how we fight together as a team.
Do we need to have some kind of national service, whether the military or helping build restore trails and parks? Yeah, are you an advocate of that?
I am. Okay. I haven't done enough research or thinking about it to argue for it coherently about how it would work, but I think it would be important. I used to 30 years ago, I was doing POW MIA work in Vietnam, Laos, and Cambodia. And I used to think, you know, what an opportunity it would be if I could take every 15-year-old American just for a quick tour of Laos so they could see how some of the rest of the world lives.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that would inspire them to try to make a difference at home, take advantage of the incredible opportunities that they have. So if we could figure out, you know, there's so many different ways it could go. Peace Corps, working with the Red Cross. It's not about the military. It's about serving other people. And if we could figure out how do we do that, I think that actually might be some of our secret sauce to more better unification of what we are as a country.
Have we brought home the remains of most of the killed in action and missing in Vietnam and Southeast Asia?
So we are down to less than 2,000 still unaccounted for. Yes.
Really?
We're still missing about 8,000 from the Korean conflict and more than, I think, 80,000 from World War II.
Mm.
So still, but this is every day we have people in the military and their civilian partners, anthropologists, working hard around the world to bring our troops home, and we're not going to leave them there. So it's really important work.
You know, no matter how down I become or dealing with all the problems I've had to deal with emotionally through grief, I think of those in my generation that didn't have the opportunities like I had. These are people my age, my contemporaries, who didn't come home from Vietnam and or parts of Southeast Asia. They were killed in action.
Right.
And there's actually an app that I'm getting now every day on Facebook, and it shows a picture of somebody my age, and it shows on this particular date this individual was killed in action in Vietnam.
Yeah.
And it makes me think, Bill, no matter how bad your day is going, at least you've had a great life up until this point. And these were some of these kids, 17, 18, 19 years old.
Yeah. And
I wanted to say that because it's very emotional to see that.
I think that it's up to us to try to make their sacrifice worth it. Whether, and we can all dissect what went on in the war in Vietnam. Should we have gone? Should we have been there?
But
that's not what that 17 or 18 or 19-year-old died for.
No.
So they made a sacrifice serving the rest of us.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the challenge to us, is to make their sacrifice worth it.
Yep. All right, General. Always a pleasure. Thank you very much. And we'll catch up with you here down
Thanks,
the road.
Bill.
Thanks.
It's All always right. Great to join you.
We love having you on the show. On behalf of General Buchanan and John on the other side of the glass, Bill Buckmaster, as I do every afternoon at this time, wishing everyone well.